meow, meow, meow. This is Freedom Fiends. This is Mr. Derek J, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2 Gay Professional Prisoner Studios. We blast only the highest quality happiness waves out into the atmosphere. This surrounds the globe with good vibrations and forces bad hamsters to surrender. Michael Dean can't be with us tonight. He's hacking the Matrix. With me tonight, the Wolfram Panther, MK, joins us from the land of George Zimmerman and Hanging Chads.
Hello.
What's up, MK? Happy
to be here. Not much. Florida's still Florida. Woo!
Worms. Yeah, we talk about freedom here on this show, and occasionally we say Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink.
It's true.
Tonight, MK is going to tell us about how to extend our lives, because we love to be alive. It's the only way to be. If you love freedom, you need to be alive to enjoy that freedom. So we better extend that as long as possible.
I prefer to be alive, definitely.
We'll get into that, but hold that thought, because I got to tell the folks at home who are curious, how are we connected right now? We're using Skype.
Yes, the inferior method of Skype. we've been testing FiendPhone, and that's been really fun. It's coming along really well. I'm using Skype right now, though, so if the sound quality isn't as good.
But you used FiendPhone for previous episodes, correct?
Well, I've just tested it. I haven't done it live yet.
Okay, excellent. Well, I look forward to the day where we're all using FiendPhone, and everyone says, Skype, what's that?
Yeah.
So if you want to support the FiendPhone high quality audio quality movement, you can do that over at FiendPhone.com, FeenPhone.com. And that's like, I don't know if they're accepting dollars. I'm sure they are. That's pretty obvious. Yeah. But they do accept Bitcoin. And that's a cool way to power technology, is with Bitcoin. We're going to be talking a lot about that tonight. You use Bitcoin a lot, MK.
I love Bitcoin. Yes.
Do you use Bitcoin today?
I haven't used it today. No.
No? Is it a daily thing, or I guess when you buy stuff, you use Bitcoin. You don't buy stuff every day, so it's not always a daily thing, even with dollars. All right, well, I want to talk about that, and also, I am going to New York City. I want to put the word out. Let the people know. If you're in the New York City area, or if you know people there, or if you just care about Ross Ulbricht and the Silk Road trial, that is happening this Tuesday. Ross Ulbricht, we'll get into the details about him, but the Silk Road is a black market website, and Ross has been alleged to be the operator of that website, and that's somehow a crime. So I'm going out to the courthouse to protest this heinous violation of freedom, and you can join me. The website to organize with us is tinyurl.com/silkroadtrial. And I want to see you there. If you can't be there, tell your friends about it, because this should be big. All right, so MK, tell us how to extend our lives.
All right, so I came across this article on The Guardian today. It says, live forever. Scientists say they'll soon extend life well beyond 120. So this is interesting. I don't know if some of the listeners are into transhumanism or some of the different developments coming out. We're already living a lot longer, though. So it kind of starts off, according to U.S. Social Security data, this scientist says, hedge fund manager Jun Yun says the probability of a 25-year-old dying before their 26th birthday is 0.1%. If we could keep that risk constant throughout life instead of rising it due to age-related disease, the average person would, statistically speaking, live 1,000 years.
Whoa.
So he launched a $1 million prize challenging scientists to, quote, hack the code of life and push human lifespan past its apparent maximum of about 120 years. So that's about the longest people have lived so far, about 120 years.
How are they doing?
Well, they're wanting to kind of solve aging, trying to get people to live healthier lives. So he basically put out a prize, and there's 15 scientific teams that have entered so far.
That's cheating. Being healthy? That's not a way to extend your life. That's, everybody knows that's the answer to extending your life. I want a pill or something to inject. Something that's just going to be like, oh, take this soma and you will live 1,000 years.
Right, right. So that's what's kind of interesting is all these different teams are going to be taking different approaches.
Oh,
too.
Okay.
So yeah, health is, I'm sure, going to be a part of it, but they're going to be doing a few different
I want the one where you can eat too. Potato chips all day and live for 1,000 years.
I really want that one.
Who wants to live for 1,000 years if you have to spend 500 of them working out?
It's true. It's true. Well, it's interesting. A lot of these people have lived into their, 110s or so. There's not a consistent, not all of them are super healthy. A lot of them, still would smoke cigarettes and drink and all these things that your doctor tells you, don't do that. That's bad for your health. So, but there's not a consistent, some of them do live very healthy lives, but some of them, just kind of eat whatever they want and just do whatever they want. They happen to live a long time. So it would be kind of interesting if you could find a consistent, parameter, I guess, what works for the most people.
Yeah,
To help them live the longest.
About the smoking people, I've always wondered about that. Do you smoke cigarettes?
I don't smoke cigarettes. No.
Did you ever?
No, I never got into it. I tried it a couple times and just never
never
really
took
liked
with
it.
You. That's good. Nope. That's healthy. Stay that way. Because I was a smoker for 5 years, and I always wondered, am I one of those people who has the gene where you'll be exempt from all the negative effects of smoking, like those people who live to be 120 and they're still smoking a pack a day. Well, why don't the cigarette companies and these scientists who you're talking about, why don't they study those people's genes? Because those people are still around. They've got the secret. It's within them. We just need to harness that and then, I don't know, use the stem cell research to make new coded babies and make sure they all have that gene that's super resistant to all the bad effects of smoking. And then people could smoke the rest of their lives and they'd be fine.
There you go. I mean, you'd think the tobacco companies might even want to fund something like this.
Right.
It's like they'll have,
why aren't they on
customers
that?
For a really long time.
Yeah. So what's the longest person anyone's been alive?
It said 122 years.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What can you do, though? When you're 122, I feel like you just, you go, you make tea, and that's it. I can't imagine. You can't go out and run. You can look out the window, watch the squirrels.
It's amazing to think about how much changes in 100 years, even in just 50 years. I mean, the last 50 years have been, we've come through so many technological advancements. I mean, I'm sure at 120, you just must be looking at the world like, how do I even understand what's going on? Like, there's just so much that's happened so fast. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a
Or maybe you get super wise. Because, it's instead of it being like, because the old people, that's part of their value, right? Is that they've all this life experience to draw on. So once you're 120, I don't know. I just feel like those people should be super wise. They should be ruling the world.
Yeah, right. I would hope they're super wise if they made it that far, They probably know a thing or two.
Have you ever thought about that philosophical question of what if you would never die? Would you take that? Like, we're talking about 1,000 years, and that's a long time. But, you would meet your great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren. That would be pretty weird. But then, if you never died, you'd meet their grandchildren and their grandchildren, and then what?
So, if you never died, would you still be aging, or would you be like a vampire and stuff?
I don't know. I actually didn't think that far. I just didn't think you'd age. Like, maybe you get frozen in time, like the picture of Dorian Gray. Would you take it if you did? If you always looked young and beautiful, but you could never die, and you would just, I guess the planet would decay and you would float around space.
Well, yeah, as long as it didn't end like the picture of Dorian Gray, and as long as, I wasn't becoming a terrible person while staying young or something. But I have thought about that. That's kind of interesting. Yeah, if you could retain your youth but live for thousands of years like a vampire.
So what else can we learn from these scientists?
So let's see. One group, Calico, the California Life Company, they're working on age-defying drugs. They're a biotech company. So these are the people who
I'm on their team.
Team Calico.
That's what I want.
So that's interesting. So, I mean, it's very interesting to see where this is going to go.
I see a quote from this guy. It says, Calico has the money to do almost anything it wants. That sounds right. That's from Tom Johnson, an earlier pioneer of the field now at the University of Colorado, who was the first to find a genetic effect on longevity in a worm. I'm glad they always start with the worm. Yeah, I feel like I have nothing in common with these things, but I suppose we're all the living creatures. We all have the same genetic makeup, and they can do the weird tests on this. Like, did you see they just did a robot? They just put a worm brain in a robot and let it, like...
What?
Yeah, they let it just drive around, and that's really cool. I mean, we're at the point in humanity where we can strap a brain to some robot and let it operate. Like, what if we did that with humans? We're not there yet, but if we could do it with a worm, maybe we could get there. And here's longevity in a worm, so maybe we can get there. It's a long shot.
And it'd be great to live for that 1,000 years, because we're starting this stuff now, and then you'd be able to live to see it, you know, progress even further. I mean, that's what's interesting to me about living, you know, extending life past a certain point is, you know, what does the future hold? Because we live in the most exciting time in history, as far as I'm concerned, now.
True. But adulthood would become meaningless.
Yeah.
You really can't have the term adulthood when... I mean, I guess you could. It just becomes a lot longer. Like, and I've worried about that happening. Have you heard about the infantilization of the population, like making people into babies and prolonging childhood?
I've noticed it. Yeah.
So, like, definitely. That's there's a term, I guess, to describe that happening. And I've noticed that, you know, like people, I guess Obama now is extending, community college, making it free for people for 2 years or something. So it's sort of like adding two more years to the government propaganda machine. It's like you don't grow up until later and later each year. And I want to know what that's going to be like when we live for 1,000 years. Can they extend childhood out for 100 years, or will we just sort of give up at a point and be like, no, we're adults for like 1,000 years? Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
The hamster in your brain. So we're talking about living forever. Is it possible? There are some people working on it, and I'm glad they are.
Yes.
And you know about these people, MK.
Some of them, yeah.
Well, go ahead with that.
All right. In an office not far from Google's headquarters in Mountain View, with a beard reaching almost to his navel, Aubrey de Grey is enjoying the new buzz about defeating aging.
He's got beard down to his navel?
Yes.
That's like Father Time style beard.
Oh, he totally looks like Father Time. He's got this like nice long It's kind of like a brown beard. Yeah.
So he's really challenging death. New Year's must be his favorite holiday.
Yeah, right. So he's on the Palo Alto Longevity Prize Board, which they're trying to, you know, find funding for life extending technologies. And he helps get tons of funding to these things. I mean, he's raised like $5 million for this research.
Okay. Well, what do you do with that money? Here, live a long, healthy life. Here's some money. I mean,
yeah, well, different, you know, working with different, you know, trying to develop different technologies. Like the people we mentioned earlier in the show, let's see, they were the name of them.
What kind of technology? I mean, besides dumbbells and you know, what's going to extend your life? What kind of technology?
Well, it looks like they're focusing on anti-aging medicine. So,
stuff.
Something that can, so not being super.
They need medicine that you don't have to eat, like anti-wrinkle cream. Your anti-wrinkle cream should contain your life-extending cream. So,
yeah, there you go.
You get both in one shot.
Yeah. And this guy, he really thinks it can be overcome, too. He says, let's see.
How do we know this isn't just some scam? Everyone wants to live forever. So, right. You know, whoever comes up and says, oh, I can make you live forever. Just give me $5 million and I'll figure it out. all the rich people. Here it says Peter Thiel gave him annually $600,000.
Yeah.
And if you don't know who Peter Thiel is, billionaire in Silicon Valley, venture capitalist.
Yeah, I mean, they're making a ton of money off of this. Let's see.
Holy moly.
Kevin Lee, director of the Ellison Medical Foundation, founded in 1977, has been the field's largest private funder, spending $45 million annually. $45 million.
Spending on what?
Trying to find anti-aging.
How much does she pay herself? Is this a guy or a girl?
It says Kevin Lee.
Oh. Sounds like it's a guy. I guess it could be either, but how much does Kevin pay himself?
That's a good question.
It seems like these people are raking in a lot of money and they're not delivering. I mean, people keep dying.
Right. Well, and, you know, a lot of the advances we've seen now are, you know, it's from curing childhood diseases when people live to be about 80 years old or so. Now people are living a lot longer, but, you know, you kind of last few years of that maybe aren't the greatest. So they're trying to extend even past that. And it's like, you know, I'm wondering if this is something that can actually be done. Because, I mean, yeah, they're dumping a bunch of money into it. So you would think we'd be seeing some actual results at some point, but
but it just seems like one thing gets fixed and another thing gets broken. Here I'm reading a quote from one of these researchers that says, I would like to see a cure for heart disease or cancer, but it would lead to a dramatic escalation in the prevalence of Alzheimer's disease. So it's like, yeah, people are gonna live longer, they're gonna beat their illness, and they're gonna live to get another illness.
Yeah,
I heard on the timeline, if you put a man's timeline to infinity, he'll get prostate cancer. It's just a matter of time. I am not a medical doctor.
this is not medical advice.
This is not advice, but that is something I heard. I believe it to be true. It makes sense, too.
Well, you know, everything degrades over time. Entropy is this force of nature. Things are just constantly kind of breaking down and wearing out. This guy was comparing, this Aubrey de Grey guy was saying our bodies are like a biological machine. And he's like, we just need to keep the machine running well. But all machines break down over time. So I wonder how long you can really extend life.
Yeah, but you can maintain things for a really long time. You know, if you maintain a car or a Swiss watch, I bet you could get those living forever.
It's possible. I can see.
What do we have to do to live forever? We'll find out on the other end of this break.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com. FENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Real.
Meow.
Worms.
Meow, meow, meow.
Worms, 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 worms. Real.
Welcome back, Freedom Fiends. MK, Derek J.
Nope.
Giving it to you, talking about origins of life. Well, actually, we're talking about extending life, but now we're going to get into some origins, because I've mentioned to MK over the last break that I was, you know, reading about this physicist who proposed a new theory on the origin of life. And these don't come around too often. I mean, I guess, yeah, people dream up their own stories, but ones that get taken seriously by physicists at places like MIT, this one's actually pretty serious. So, could he be right? I don't know. The article from io9.com reads, a 31-year-old researcher from MIT. So he's just some researcher. He doesn't even have a real job. Believes he's figured out the basic physics behind the origin and evolution of life in the universe. So, according to this physicist, his name is Jeremy England, the origin of life and evolution are processes driven by the fundamental laws of nature, namely the second law of thermodynamics. And what is that? What is the second law of thermodynamics, MK?
So the second law of thermodynamics is known as the law of increasing entropy. The first, oh, I should know this.
Put you on the spot. Who knows these things? They throw these terms around like this is a well-known concept. I mean, I remember hearing about it in science, but to be honest, I would have to Google it. I wish there were things that we still knew. Like,
yeah,
things we could memorize. School was so useless. It just gives you the vague shadow of a memory of a term, and then you can remember to look it up. So what is it? What are these laws?
Okay, so the first law of thermodynamics states that energy can be transformed from one form to another, but cannot be created or destroyed. And then the second law of thermodynamics has to do with entropy. It's a law of nature that things break down over time. Hot things cool down, gas diffuses through air, eggs scramble but never spontaneously unscramble.
Oh,
so
that's funny.
So it disperses out. Energy disperses out as time progresses.
Could you imagine an egg just unscrambling? What a sight. So is that what he's saying? That's how life started? Like a bunch of... Isn't that the theory? It's a bunch of goo and then that sort of formed into... I don't know, a human or a plant or something? That doesn't make sense. Well, I guess here's how it's described. You start with a random clump of atoms, and if you shine light on it for long enough, it should be no surprise you get a plant. That's what England says. But that is a surprise to me. This is a super genius talk from MIT.
Yeah. So, yeah, it is shining light on something, adding energy to it. Let's see. It's kind of further down. This is someone else describing his work.
Well, I want to hear about that. This is Natalie Walchover describing his work. She says, at the heart of England's ideas, the second law of thermodynamics. also known as the Arrow of Time. That's an interesting way to put that. Second law of thermodynamics, increasing entropy, arrow of time. Hot things cool down. Oh, like you just said.
Yeah. Right, right.
So, but there are more ways for energy to be spread out than for it to be concentrated. They can spread around a room. But I don't understand how this could be. Do you follow this guy's idea? Because it sounds like he's talking psychobabble to me. How did MIT scientists take this seriously? I thought the value in a new theory is that it explains something. And this is not explaining anything to me.
Yeah, you know, I'm not quite grasping it either.
I think they're crazy.
Let's see. He's talking about, yeah, eventually after enough energy is dispersed and spreads out, it arrives at a state of maximum entropy called thermodynamic equilibrium. And that's where all the energy is uniformly distributed.
What a term. That's like when you've got a really hot cup of coffee in a cold room and you leave it there for a little while through the arrow of time and the coffee cools down and the room heats up, but the reverse doesn't happen. You're not going to get like a lukewarm room and a lukewarm coffee, and all of a sudden the coffee heats up and the room cools down. That's just not going to happen. Or is he saying that is what's going to happen if you put it on the scale of infinity? Like, oh, we've got infinite time. Eventually, the room is going to cool down because the atoms just bounce around doing weird things. Maybe that's it. I think I've got it. NK, this is it.
I think, yeah.
His theory is, even though it looks like, in most cases, a coffee would cool down in a room, sometimes coffee heats up. Just by random. Is that his theory? Have I got it?
I'm not sure that that's it. Let's see.
Because it increases.
Yeah, it's basically saying after that energy is lost, it never comes back to it. Like after it's never going to heat up on its own again unless there's some external source that adds energy to it. So he's basically saying,
this is so painful to me.
Things started from energy being added to it.
I want to understand. I want to understand life, and it's so hard. It's like there's no answer. And there's all these other people who propose answers like, God did it. And it sounds so simple and elegant to just have an answer. But I can't accept that. I can't accept this one either, because I can't understand it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm agnostic myself when it comes to this stuff. As far as origins, you know, I'm kind of more focused with what we can do now and what we're looking for towards the future.
You're agnostic?
Yeah.
Did you know that an Egypt student just got a 3-year jail term for saying he was agnostic?
Really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
wow.
It's criminal in some places. You can't believe that.
Wow.
You're not allowed.
I mean, people have been killed for it, you know, throughout history.
Wow.
So it's yeah.
I don't know. You're saying that.
We are very fortunate to live in a place where we do have that freedom, where we can just say that. And, it, you know, no one's going to be asking for my head on a stick or anything like that.
That's, boy, isn't that the truth? We really won the lottery of life being born in a place where that's accepted, where you can believe things and even be very wrong about things publicly, and people can't hurt you for it. That's great.
Right,
That's great that humanity learned that lesson somewhere along the line and during the Enlightenment. We were talking about that, I guess it's been all over the blogosphere and all over the radio, is people talking about what happened at Charlie Hebdo, the horrible massacre out in France, where a person killed some other people for drawing cartoons.
Yeah.
And I was like, how have we not gotten past it, since it's been like 200, 300 years since the Enlightenment, where the birth of that idea of, like, you can't hurt people over them saying things, like, you know, I will defend to the death. Wait, what is the expression? I don't believe what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. Essentially that.
We're,
that got thrown out the window. I guess it stayed in the Middle East because it's still in Egypt. It's still, wasn't it, I don't know, no, it was in France where that massacre just happened. That's not the Middle East.
Right, right. Well, yeah, they were, you know, extremists, and it's really...
extremists are from the Middle East.
Well, no, just, you know, people can be extremist anywhere, and I think that's more of a problem than religion in general. You know, I feel horrible for the people who, you know, some others have been associating with these extremist murderers because they happen to share the same religion. I mean, now there's all this backlash against Muslim people in France. You know, mosques are being graffitied on and vandalized over something that someone else did.
That's horrible.
And it's really awful.
That's property rights violation because that mosque didn't do anything to anybody. Come on.
Right. And the people there, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like they're all connected. It's, you know, giant Muslim network. And if a terrorist attack happens, like, they're, like, cool with it. That's not... People are individuals, and
the Muslims did
them.
It.
Right.
All
like,
of them.
Like, they're this monolith of, you know...
Yeah, it's like they're a tribe. That's such a tribe mentality. Hey, do you want to hear about what happened to this kid? Kareem Albana, a 21-year-old whose father testified against him, was jailed by a court in the Nile Delta province on Saturday.
Wow.
3 years for announcing on Facebook that he is an atheist and for insulting Islam. Oof.
Oh,
so be
goodness.
Careful what you say out there. Actually, you're allowed to be an atheist and agnostic here in the land of the free. There's that one freedom.
Yeah. That's true. We don't get killed for cartoons. I mean, they're threats. I mean, they're like the guys who make South Park. I mean, they always have threats against them. But, you know, so far, not a whole lot of people have acted on it. And
do you take your freedom for granted?
I try not to. I mean, I feel like if we have these freedoms, it's incumbent upon us to use them as often as possible, like, especially freedom of speech.
Yeah, like you're doing that right now. You're speaking free. And that's liberating.
Well, it is, and especially in the case of art. I mean, any kind of art, you know, there have always been people who've wanted to censor art throughout history and have tried to stop the creative artistic spirit, and you just can't do that. It's unacceptable, and more art has to be made in response to that, in response to those hostile actions.
Wow, I totally agree with that. There was this brilliant artist who was told that art doesn't change anything. You can't be an artist. Because he was such a wonderful student, all of the people in the school wanted to dissuade him from becoming an artist. He said, you know, it doesn't change anything. And it will never influence people, or he can never make his statement or whatever. So the next day they came into the school, and the secretary's office had been painted. The wall was painted with an image of the secretaries, the very secretaries who told him not to be an artist, that he'll never make anything from himself. Them making out on the wall. It was just an image, you know, totally painted, totally pleasing, visually, nothing unusual or lewd about it. Just some a gentle kiss. And they were wrong. They were shown to be wrong. And he went to become a famous artist. We'll reveal that art.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Worms, Worms. Welcome back, Freedom Fiends. Hey, MK, are you safe?
Hey.
Have you been contacted by the government?
I am safe and have not been contacted by the government.
Worms. Me too. I'm safe. I know you're concerned. This is redemption in the third act. And we're going to leave you on a happy note. At least for this segment. Art as activism.
Yes. So artists have always been activists. Going way back. I mean, whether it's music, paintings, there's always been so many defiant works of art throughout history. And
I love that, yeah. Like Dadaism. That really made people mad.
Oh, it did. It challenged the concept of what art could be. And even, you know, modern art, you know, even postmodern art, it's constantly reevaluating and challenging what art can be. So it's anarchic, really.
How would you describe Dadaism?
It's absurd. It's just a complete absurdism. It's challenging the notion that there's a traditional way to paint and a traditional, you know, what is and what isn't beautiful. What is the beautiful aesthetic? And it's saying, you know, we're going to maybe it's even mocking in a lot of ways. It's mocking absurdity.
Yeah, I love the topic of art as activism because there are so many artists who have inspired me with their activism. There was one man and woman who were outside of a courthouse because someone had been arrested for wearing a hat, and they were drawing on the sidewalk out in front of the courthouse like a person shouldn't be arrested for wearing a hat. And that woman who was chalking that got arrested for chalking. So the next guy grabs the chalk and says, "You shouldn't be arrested for chalking." And he doesn't even get to finish writing that before he's arrested for the very same thing. And that art totally offended people, even though, I mean, what is it? It's not a nasty word. It's nothing dirty. It's just expressing the idea that government is wrong.
Right. And whenever you express these ideas, you're going to have this backlash, even if you do it in a very beautiful form. And a lot of artists are very headstrong about that. I learned parts of history from listening to Dead Kennedys songs. I got really into Dead Kennedys. And I think music is such a powerful form of art because it's so evocative. It's so emotionally evocative. It can make you angrier, you know, especially in the case of punk and like the Dead Kennedys. I mean, you know, it was so inspiring as a young teen getting into this and learning about this culture and learning about, I mean, obviously they're very far left wing socialists. I don't agree with their politics, but I did find it very inspiring and it made me angry about the system. It made me, you know, look into things like police brutality and even look into communist regimes and look into some of these other things because it had that emotional reaction from me.
Yeah, art can work for good or for evil, I suppose. There are some artists who work for the government, producing propaganda, making mm-hmm. them look good, and I don't appreciate that. I don't like that. I wish they would stop. But I suppose they're free to do what they want, and all I can do is produce more art to counter that, and our art can do battle.
Yeah, counter-propaganda art.
Yeah. So what other kinds of art as activism is there? Did you hear about the story in Keene, New Hampshire, where they tried to ban chalk? This is another chalk story.
There
were activists. Yeah, this actually happened. This year, there were so many people upset in this town of 25,000 that people were using chalk to draw pictures and write messages down in the central square, the little like area downtown where people can gather and look at a fountain. And it's pretty. And some people just didn't want there to be chalk messages. One of the city councilors even went so far as to propose that chalk be banned.
Well, you know how subversive chalk is.
What do you think would have happened? I mean, would this be the first town in America to ban chalk? And then they'd have to hang their heads in shame and say, "Live free or die nothing."
Be the first thing to have a chalk graffiti everywhere.
I want to know the secrets to living forever. All right, hour two is coming up next. I want to talk about this cancer patient that the state is forcing chemotherapy on. I hope she can live forever. Plus, we'll talk about the Supreme Court and your gun rights. What can the local police do to take your guns away? Or what can you do to keep them?
Worms.
All that and more. Worms.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges.
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Hey, there's some Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network. A collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
So good to be with you. Broadcasting from the Liberty Media capital of the world, Keene, New Hampshire, and across the interwebs with me, it's MK in the land of hanging chads.
Yep.
And we're talking about freedom, activism, liberty. Obama is a socialist, a liar, and his feet stink. And how great it is to celebrate what freedoms we do have. But unfortunately, that sort of doesn't include owning a website. Yeah, I'm talking about Ross Ulbricht. He's the alleged operator of the Silk Road black market website. What is that, MK?
So the Silk Road was a dark web website that allowed you to purchase recreational drugs with cryptocurrency, like Bitcoin.
And that's not all, right?
That's not all. You could purchase things like fake IDs, things like that. Something that you could not purchase, though, was some of the more, you know, dangerous things. You couldn't purchase weapons or people, for instance.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, there wasn't human trafficking or anything like that on the Silk Road.
How do you know?
They took a strong sense against that. It was actually said by Ross Ulbricht, or actually Dread Pirate Roberts. It's not confirmed whether or not he is Dread Pirate Roberts, but yeah, he actually took a stand against that in several interviews he did before they busted Ross Ulbricht and said he was Dread Pirate Roberts.
Okay, yeah. So and Dread Pirate Roberts is sort of like the pen name that the real operator of the Silk Road uses, and we don't know who that is yet. But the state alleges, or the federal government says, it's Ross Ulbricht, and they're taking him to court next week. The trial begins Tuesday in New York City, and I'm going to be there. Are you going, MK?
I'm not able to make it up there. I can't afford to make it up to New York City for that. But I have donated to the Legal Defense Fund. I've spoken with Lynn Ulbricht, his mother, very, very wonderful lady. Everyone has my support up there. So, you know, and also the, you know, different efforts to just educate people about the case, too. I mean, it's very important.
People can donate like you did at freeross.org. So I donated some Bitcoin over at freeross.org. I threw a little dance party I talked about on The Fiends in previous episodes, and that was a benefit for Ross because I just feel like he's trapped. He's a victim. He's in the state web, you know? And once you're in one of their cages and they take you through the railroading process of a kangaroo court where they've pretty much made up their minds about what the punishment's going to be ahead of time before they even charge you with a crime, it's so hopeless. But there are still people working on trying to save him. There's some activism going on in New York City throughout the week. There are going to be activists in the trial reporting on what's going on for a show called The Liberty Beat. They do a daily update on what's going on in the world of freedom, and they're going to be talking about Ross every day. I think it's so important to talk about Ross and this website because it was sort of like the birth of freedom on the internet. Like the freedom that the internet gave people to connect with one another was step one. That was huge. Chat rooms and websites interacting, doing. But then black market business online. That's huge.
And Wired magazine did a good piece about how the Silk Road reduced violence in the drug trade. So this is something that also has never been done before, where you had people who were able to get access to sometimes life-saving medication. It wasn't just recreational drugs. Sometimes it was life-saving medication. And they were able to access it and get it delivered to their homes. And maybe it's illegal in the country they're from. And they needed this. And this was something that was beneficial to them.
Like what? I find that hard to believe. I mean, I would like to believe that. But like what drug were people buying that is prohibited in their home country that they were able to acquire over the Silk Road?
Well, something that's good for therapy would be MDMA. This was actually used in clinical trials in the 70s for family therapy. And it is also a recreational drug, but it does have medicinal use.
Oh, okay.
So this is something that people would use for family counseling
MK
or relationship
is not a medical
counseling.
Doctor.
I'm not a medical doctor. I do not recommend you do
MKMD.
At all, the MKMT. But that's something that a lot of people believe has therapeutic use and is good for certain medical reasons. Again, I'm not advocating you use it at all.
No, but that's one of the things I love about the Silk Road. Even though I never used the website, I feel like I benefited from it. And I feel like we all benefited from it by it making the world a safer place. Because these drug dealers, most of the things that were sold on the Silk Road were drugs. So all these drug dealers and vendors and their customers no longer have to meet face-to-face in back alleys or wherever they're meeting that typically is where the violence happens. So it's taking violence out of the world, out of the equation in these businesses and making it a lot safer. You know, you may disagree with what they're doing, with the purchases that they're making, but, you know, at least it's not violent. You know, we all benefit from that.
That's true. It's extremely dangerous to engage in that sort of activity. And the government makes it more dangerous, too, with something like the war on drugs. And when they try to prohibit it, what they do is they flood certain markets with tainted drugs. You know, they make good, you know, safer drugs harder to get. So there's a lot of danger there. But then it's also just the militarization of the police and how they've come to crack down on people doing minor drug deals, you know, selling marijuana, things like that, you know, victimless crimes.
Yeah, you don't even
have
to.
That's the dangerous part of it.
Exactly. Yes, it's the government is the one that's using force on these people and creating victims where there weren't any before. I mean, you don't have to support drugs or any drug use at all to support Ross Ulbricht and the Silk Road. Because what the government is alleging is not that, he's not alleged to have sold the drugs per se. He operated a website where other people did that. And now he's getting charged with the crime. Can you imagine if that were the standard? I mean, think about all of the crimes that have happened on Craigslist, for example. Are we subpoenaing the whole Craigslist office and dragging them all into court, charging them with the life for all the prostitution that happens on Craigslist or for illicit drug sales, gun sales? You know, all these things, which we know happen on Craigslist and other websites, are we dragging them into court? Or is it just because some kid figured out a way to increase the freedom and peace in the world and the government had to put a stop to it?
Well, and they're using it because they're trying to paint the internet, especially the deep web, as this very scary kind of place. But this would never work if it was a physical locality. For instance, you couldn't say that, they do seize people's house over this, but to say that, the person whose home it is where some drug dealing may have been going on nearby or something can just be, that person is responsible for the drug dealing, or the drug dealing on a road, for instance, like, okay, a drug deal took place on this road. Does the owner of the road have the, are they morally responsible for that illegal activity?
Ooh, that's such a great point, because that would be the government. That would be their road.
Exactly.
So are they going to charge themselves with the crime of facilitating drug sales because they provide the road? It would be crazy. Right. Obviously, you can tell this is not a good standard.
I mean, if you go back far enough, I mean, you know, who created the internet? I mean, it was, you know, it came out of DARPA, which was a government agency. So really, if you want to go back far enough, I mean...
Well, you just flipped their case around on them.
It's kind of their fault.
Hey, you've got to come to New York and let Ross Ulbricht's lawyer know.
It's DARPA's fault.
I have a lot of hope for this.
DARPA.
Maybe I'm stupid for holding out hope. But I do believe that Ross could be found not guilty on all four charges. And there are four charges adding up to a minimum of 30 years if found guilty on all four. 30 years to life. Essentially for operating a website. Again, he's not been charged with actual sales of drugs, just that he operates the website where that happened, allegedly. And then again, that's another whole realm, MK. Do you remember how this came out? Was the government said, we've got him. We've got Dread Pirate Roberts. Everyone was shocked. No. How did this happen? Well, apparently he was at some library using the computer. They saw him log in. They had been tracking him. Well, how did they figure out who he was? Well, the government said they were just tinkering around and filling out forms on a website trying to sign in as him, and whoops, we figured it out. We got his username and password. Do you believe that?
No, I'm pretty doubtful of the official story. Ulbricht's lawyer is saying that the NSA probably helped out in some of the surveillance, and they're trying to counter that. But yeah, they're using a very interesting argument. They're saying the FBI accessed the server through an error in the Silk Road login page that leaked an Icelandic IP address.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
Through using a CAPTCHA. And yeah, that sounds bizarre. And what other people are saying, people who've studied the case, they're saying it looked like it was an intentional hack.
Yeah.
Instead of just, this leaked out and we just kind of followed it. And the things don't work.
Yeah. When does the FBI just say, whoops, we guessed your password? I mean, obviously, they were working with other agencies of government like the NSA that we now know does spy on all Americans. And so, why wouldn't they have this information on Ross? So it seems like they used an illegitimate form of information gathering in order to prosecute this guy. The whole thing should be thrown out. I mean, when a cop pulls you over and performs an illegal search and finds something prohibited, they can't charge you with the crime, right? Because the whole thing gets thrown out because the cop didn't follow procedure. Well, the same thing should happen here, in my opinion.
Yeah, and, you know, they targeted what was, I think, a legitimate business. It wasn't something that is popular to do, as far as, you know, it's not commonly accepted that people should be engaging in this type of activities, but it was a legitimate, highly rated business.
Yeah, that's the other thing. That's the other way the black market website made things safer for the whole world, is you could provide reviews like you can on Yelp. You don't get that with drug dealers in the back alley.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Freedom Fiends, tasing you with liberty. Yeah, and we're talking about Ross Ulbricht. He's a hero. He's a hero to me because he made the world a safer place. Black markets are going to exist. People are going to buy and sell things that they're not allowed to buy and sell. So that should be as safe as it can possibly be. And the Silk Road made it as safe as it ever has been by allowing people to connect on the internet and trade in a mysterious new digital cryptocurrency called Bitcoin. You love Bitcoin, don't you, MK?
I do love Bitcoin.
You're so crazy about it, you have a website.
Yes. There's Bitcoin Not Bombs. We just did the Hoodie the Homeless campaign. That was great. I did one Pensacola with Food Not Bombs.
What is that? What are you talking about?
So Bitcoin Not Bombs is kind of the anti-war voice in Bitcoin. And we also do an annual Hoodie the Homeless fundraiser and campaign where we raise money to give homeless people hoodies. And then we also partnered with Global Grins, and they gave us a bunch of toothbrush and toothpaste. So we were able to give that out with the hoodies. And that went really well.
Awesome. You're involved with some of the best organizations on the planet, in my opinion. You really are. The Pensacola charity is Sean's Outpost.
Right.
And that is Bitcoin-based as well.
Yes, it's all Bitcoin donations, and they fed, it's 140,000 homeless meals to the homeless people in the area about a year and a half. So they do a great job. And Bitcoin Not Bombs, antiwar.com came out of, actually, Bitcoin Not Bombs came out of an alliance with antiwar.com. Antiwar.com started taking Bitcoin as a result of finding out they were being spied on by the FBI.
Ooh. So,
yes.
That's never fun.
But Bitcoin's great for that.
Was that before or after they found out that everyone was being spied on? Do they feel special for a little while?
I believe it was after. But I think with them, a lot of them suspected it for a very long time. I think
a lot of clicking on their phones.
when you're part of a radical organization, you expect to be targeted, especially if you're being successful, which anti-war Fiends.com does a great job of reporting on real news of what's actually happening. And, you know, they're a very strong voice out there. So, yeah, I mean, it's reasonable to think you're going to be targeted.
I'm crazy enough to believe I can convert the government agents who are following me.
It's possible. Everyone can change.
Well,
you know,
think about this. If they're following you and watching you and learning about all the things you do and listening to the things you say, they're your best audience. Don't you think they would eventually come around and say, hey, maybe I should stop trying to... I mean, maybe they could keep doing... If they're really good people, they'll be like, well, I'll just keep following MK around. She's doing nothing harmful, and it's just a lot of fun. So I'll just keep listening to the Freedom Fiends. You know, there are probably other government agents who are following people who are actually nasty and horrible and plotting bad things. And that would be really scary. Like Donnie Brasco or whatever that movie was where Johnny Depp was trying to follow around some bad people. I mean, he got mixed up in some bad stuff. And that would be dangerous and scary. So I just want to make it as happy and comfortable for whatever agents would want to follow me. And, you know... I spread the red carpet for you, government agents. I want to make it nice and easy so that you hear my message of peace and freedom. And Ross Ulbricht. Sorry, go on.
This is as exciting as it gets for me if anyone's spying. I mean, they must be bored out of their minds. Like, but I don't even think, like, I don't know. I know there's like general spying, but I don't think I'm being targeted in any way. I'm just not that high profile at all. I'm not dangerous.
You wish.
I don't think. I'm not as dangerous.
When are we going to get to the point where there's two government agents for every person and we're all spying on each other?
We're all spying.
So, hey, back to Ross, because we were talking about Bitcoin and Ross Ulbricht, I attribute him. He's not the creator of Bitcoin. At least I don't think so. But he probably did more for Bitcoin than any other one person. Would you agree with that?
Explain. I'm curious.
If people wanted to use the Silk Road, they needed to use Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah.
If people heard about the Silk Road, they also heard about Bitcoin. And that's millions of people. He turned the world onto Bitcoin.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
To MK Ultra?
No.
Oh, okay. Welcome back. It's the Fiends. The Freedom Fiends. Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink. We're talking about Ross Ulbricht and the Silk Road. I think this is just a fascinating case. This is the case for our time. This is the most important trial in my lifetime, I truly believe. Because it could affect the future of internet freedom. Essentially, Ross is being charged with operating a website, and people using his website did naughty things, and so he's getting punished for that. I mean, that's crazy. That's not a precedent that can stand in a civilized society, because that would mean that you can't have any websites, essentially.
Right. I mean, this would target people like eBay or Craigslist or, you know, anyone who's offering other people to offer their services on their site.
Yeah. The thing I really don't like about this is it's so hard to explain the unseen, right? When you have a chilling effect from a decision like this, where let's say, for example, the judge finds Ross guilty and she says, it makes total sense to me that a person who operates a website should be charged with the crime of the people who use those websites. You will start to see, or not see, rather, businesses that do not appear, that would otherwise. You know, people who say, oh, I want to get into business selling this or that, or doing business on the internet, and they won't do it because they're afraid of the legal liability. You know that happens. It's called the chilling effect, right? Where there's some consequence, but you can't see it. And it's so hard to fight against that which is unseen.
It is. And this is especially bad for people who are living in the economy that we're living in now, which is still not quite recovered. And people are running out of money. You know, their wages aren't going up. Maybe they're looking for other ways that they can make money and be more entrepreneurial. But when you see laws like these, you know, the precedents being set and the laws that could come from that, then yeah, there is that chilling effect. Then there could be people who are just afraid to even try to do something like that because, you know, they don't want to be thrown in jail. That would definitely, you know, make it harder to pay your bills and all of that.
You know what it reminds me of? It's kind of like the pictures that I see in the old Soviet Union where people, like Davi was referencing on The Fiends the other night, a woman using an abacus next to a cash register. I mean, this is so ancient. It's sort of like society and civilization slows to a halt and stops producing things that are new and stops innovating. Because, you know, they're too afraid. There are too many negative consequences for innovating. Like, look at what Ross did. Did he create any victims? None that are alleged. But now he's being punished and we lose. Actually, we don't lose the Silk Road. Don't you have a story about that?
Yeah, so the interesting thing about the deep web is the people engaged in it are much more anti-authoritarian, and you can't stop these markets. So the Silk Road is relaunched. There's this article on Vice Motherboard called Silk Road Reloaded, just launched on a network more secure than Tor. And Tor was a network that you could access Silk Road on. It's called the Onion Router. But this site has launched on an alternative called I2P. So this is supposed to be a little similar to Tor, but a little bit different, a little bit lesser known. And it's basically, it does the same thing. You can use Bitcoin to purchase certain substances that governments don't think you should have.
Have you been on this site?
I have not, no. I am not familiar with how to access I2P.
Yeah. Okay, neither am I. But sounds like it's another Bitcoin-based thing. I'm not surprised because Bitcoin is a great currency to use on the internet.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's super easy. It makes sense why people do this. And you can add layers of anonymity with Bitcoin too. You can make it to where it's harder to track where the Bitcoin are coming from.
Yeah, I've been amazed. I've seen Lynn Ulbricht, who's Ross's mom, met her at the Porcupine Freedom Festival in New Hampshire this summer, where she was giving a speech, and she uses Bitcoin to raise funds for her son.
Yes. Yeah. And especially if you're wanting to fundraise for controversial sources, Bitcoin is a way to raise funds for those people, and they can have the donors can have a little bit of privacy, a little degree of privacy. This is why antiwar.com started taking Bitcoin. So it was so their donors could have a degree of privacy when they were donating. You know, maybe you don't want your name on a donation to Ross Ulbricht's legal defense fund. You know, maybe you don't want to write a check to that, you know, with your name on it.
Yeah, I could see why a person wouldn't want that.
Yeah,
it seems so awesome. Bitcoin is the real-world practical example of how governments really can't stop things. They can only put a stop to an instance of a thing, but they can't stop the thing itself. Like, they can't stop Bitcoin. They can only take one person away and throw him in a cage. Charlie Schramm, you know, from BitInstant. They thought they got him. They were like, oh, the CEO of Bitcoin. Here's some big-time Bitcoin guy. We'll put him in a cage and we'll put a stop to that. No, Bitcoin lives on. It's probably bigger than ever now. And, you know, it's sad that the state took one victim as, as sacrifice. But
they wanted to set an
Bitcoin.
Example.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. And this is another one of those where they're trying to set an example. You know, I heard an interesting theory from an activist. Tell me what you think about this, MK. Maybe the judge has political aspirations. Now, I know this is a reach. I know this is speculation. All caveats But allegedly, one activist did some digging and discovered that this judge who's presiding over Ross Ulbricht's case was formerly employed making about $500,000 a year as an attorney. And she quit her job for a job that pays $175,000 a year. This is a significant decline in income to become a judge from a lawyer. Why would a person take a huge pay cut?
Well, you know, there's a lot of reasons, but, you know, it is possible that she's looking for a career change into a different field. And so this kind of goes. I interviewed Patrick Byrne.
Wait a minute. You're not playing speculation game with me. I want to say that I'll just tell you what I think. I think this woman is a politico, and she's taking a pay cut because she gets more power. I mean, why would you go from attorney to judge because of the power?
Yeah, right.
So anyway, that's my speculation. I think she's a power hungry lawyer type who's completely evil, has her mind made up about this case, and wants to rest on this for her future political aspirations. Just want to put that out there as my own little conspiracy theory based on nothing. So go ahead with what you were talking about, Patrick Byrne.
Well, this is the problem with regulatory capture. So I had Patrick Byrne on. I do a YouTube show called Crypto Combos, and we kind of went into this a little bit. You know, when regulators regulate certain industries like the SEC, for example, you know, they'll regulate it, and then, you know, they'll quit their job as a regulator and go into, you know, the banks that they were regulating previously. So this happens all the time. It's regulatory capture. You know, they make deals with the regulators saying, okay, when you're done, you know, give us a favorable rating or whatever. And when you're done, you can come work for us and make even more money. So there's the power element, like you said, but, you know, maybe there's other plans. I don't want to speculate too much with her situation, because I think power and money are different, and I think people will sacrifice money to get a little more power.
Yeah, but I think
power,
that's interesting.
Is intoxicating.
That's revealing too. I mean, who are these people who judge over us? It's up to her. I mean,
she hates them too. I mean, some of the stuff that she's allowing in this case, I mean, it's so set against him.
And disallowing. Here's one thing that's really strange. This is a precedent-setting decision by this judge. It sort of overturns everything since the Magna Carta, but the Ross, the defendant in this case, is not allowed, or was not allowed, to know the witnesses who will be testifying against him. He was just revealed that information Friday. The trial is Tuesday. So he had about 4 days to go over the witness list. Is that normal?
No. In fact, it takes weeks to prepare, you know, when you do get access to the witness list. You know, this is something it takes. It's a very extensive legal process because you have to come up with counterarguments. His lawyer, you know, a lot of it is counterarguments. So if you're just released that 4 days before the trial, you have very little time to prepare your case.
Yeah. I just got to say how awesome Lynn Ulbricht is, his mother, because,
yes,
you know, with all of the people who have been victimized by the state, and there are, you know, too many to count, how often do you see their mother rise up and stand to their defense? I mean, you know, the mother's always going to say, oh, he's innocent, he never hurt anybody. You expect that. But to see the degree to which, like, to talk about the degree to which Lynn has gone to help her son.
She set up his fundraiser. She's really reached out to the libertarian and Bitcoin communities and shown up at more events talking about Ross and bringing his case to the forefront. She's doing everything she can to raise awareness about this. And she's also being open to a lot of new ideas that she previously hadn't considered. She's sitting down and she'll sit down and talk with you about him and about his case. And, I mean, she's just very, very generous, very gracious with her time, and cares very deeply about the outcomes, the greater outcomes, not just about her son. She's very much a big picture person. She realizes the ramifications that this case could have for internet freedom and some of these greater problems that we're seeing. So of course she cares about her son, but she's also seeing the greater picture, and I mean, just really, really a great woman.
Do you think Ross was a mama's boy?
I think it's possible, yeah. Yeah.
I bet he was. Because they seem close. You know, and I don't mean that in a bad sense. I think that's great to be close with, you know, a parent. Why not? Yeah, I think that's cool. No, I ask because, you know, it's weird to keep a secret like that. It's such a big secret. Can you imagine the holidays getting together with the family and, you know, here you are. I mean, you know, I don't know whether or not he actually operated the Silk Road, but if he did, it would be pretty cool to have kept that secret. I wonder what other secrets he's kept.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot. You know, I'm very curious to see how the defense is going to work this. I mean, they're really up against a lot.
Can they
say
anything?
They're really dogpiling.
What can the defense do at this point?
Well,
they just stand. We rest our case. We've got nothing. There's nothing they could do. The prosecution makes all their arguments, and the defense will say, I don't know, they're going to have to make a pretty impassioned speech. There's going to be reporters covering it every day. You can follow it at the Liberty Beat. We've got one segment left. We're going to calm the hamster in your brain when we come back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Fiends. Oh, the police are furious in Stockton. We'll tell you why. But first, we're going to wrap up this topic of Ross Ulbricht. Hero, alleged Silk Road founder. If he is the founder, then he is a hero. If he's not, then he's just some innocent man who's being put on trial and in risk of his life. So either way, he needs your support. FreeRoss.org is the website to donate to him. If you want to join me, Derek J., in New York City, and hold a poster, hold a sign, sing some songs for peace and freedom, you can do that. tinyurl.com/Silk Road Trial. That will connect you to the Facebook event page where some of us are organizing to peacefully demonstrate outside of the courthouse where Ross will be tried. There are others who are going to be handing out jury nullification information. If you'd like to join them, you're free to do that as well. And there's independent media covering the event every day for the Liberty Beat. Catch them at thelibertybeat.com. Exciting stuff, MK. I just can't wait for this. It could go on for months.
It really could, yeah.
But I'm hoping it's just a week.
We'll see.
I don't know.
I definitely hope for the best.
Shorter is better. It seems like if they drag it out, they're just bringing up witnesses and that from the state, and they're just going to, it's just going to be bad. I want trials to be short, nice and short. So the judge says, not guilty. Bang. Let this man be free. Is there anything else we need to wrap up for Silk Road before we move on?
Let's see.
Silk Road.
Still donate to the defense fund. And definitely, you know, do your own research into this case. Really look at what they're throwing at him. And, you know, this is what happens when you try to do something that is heroic and is outside of the box and can be liberating.
Yeah, and it doesn't go away. That's the other thing. You shared the story about how the Silk Road, I mean, what did it pop up again a month later?
Oh, yeah.
On tour. So that still exists. And a new Silk Road also exists. So
a bunch of other sites, too. I mean, there are tons of deep websites where you can do the same things.
Yeah. So the moral of the story is freedom is like a hydra. And when you cut one freedom, more grow in its place. You cannot stop it. So absolutely. Freedom is going to happen. We're going to help Ross if we can. And So tell me why police are furious in Stockton.
So this is awesome. So citizens in Stockton who were concerned about police brutality started a crowdsourced fundraiser. It's a $2,500 reward to anyone who submits information leading to the arrest or termination of police who brutalize or kill people. And they even have a list of officers you can keep an eye out for. So this is great. I mean, $2,500, that's a lot of money, you know, to put up. And this is a bunch of concerned citizens basically grouping together and saying, we're tired of this brutality. We want there to be progress. It's direct action. It's an excellent idea.
Yeah, I would just hope that they use to donate, they use the tax money that they would have sent to the police department. Because they're still paying the police department.
Probably, yeah. I mean, yeah, I think most people pay taxes to avoid the penalties.
I don't know. But, I kind of see it's consistent, though. So I would want people to just stop paying the police that they think are awful and bad. Like, you don't pay a Starbucks if you don't like what they give you. But if you do want to pay them and you just want to reward the arrests of bad cops, it seems like you could actually get a clean police department that way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you have that kind of incentive at play there, I would think so.
This could actually work.
Yeah, especially if you really increase the rewards, too. You know, if you really get some of these, you make it a larger crowdfunding site. Or this article mentions, what if you have it funded by wealthy anti-authoritarians? I mean, there are a lot of people out there who could put up a lot of money for this.
But so who gets the money, though?
The people who provide the information that can lead to a conviction. So
very
filming, yeah.
Wow, so this is really incentivizing a free and peaceful future where we hold the police accountable.
Yeah.
That's really exciting. Well, I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain tonight. We've talked about Ross Ulbricht, hero of the Silk Road, how art can be activism, and how to really scare the police.
Yeah.
Make them think that they're going to be held accountable for their actions.
Gotta keep an eye on them.
Worms. Hey, increase the freedom in your life each day. And do something today that reminds you you are free.
Worms.
Worms.